Yeah, that's a great question.
Okay, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Call to order, the regular committee of the whole meeting of the Geneva City Council. My name is Chuck Brown. I'm my regularly scheduled time to chair the committee of the whole meeting. So let's start, and with the deputy clerk, please note that all are present except Alderman Pollock. The mayor is with us tonight as well. Are there any additions, changes to the agenda?
The only one change, Mr. Chairman, is that closed session will not be held tonight per my email earlier this afternoon to the committee.
All right. We will remove the closed session from the agenda. May I have a motion to approve the agenda as amended?
So second.
We have a motion by Hill and a second by Flanagan. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? All right. We have a new agenda. Let's proceed. Item number two is a public hearing on the proposed enlargement of special service area number one to include Harrington Inn expansion. I presume one of the staff would like to speak to this issue. Paul, if you would.
Thank you, Chairman Brown, City Council. Tonight, staff is presenting what we call an enlargement ordinance for the special service area. It's a public hearing for the special service area number one, and this is to include the Harrington Inn expansion as part of the SSA 1. Back when the SSA was reestablished in February of 1997, part of the Harrington expansion was zoned R3. There was a single-family house located on that. And as a residential use, this property was not included in the SSA. But in November of 98, Schody Incorporated requested that the land be rezoned to accommodate the Harrington Inn expansion. unfortunately, after that, the land, after it was rezoned, we did not add that into the SSA at that time. It was an oversight because the zoning was still showing it as being residential. So staff believes the whole hotel expansion should be included in the SSA because the employees and the patrons of the SSA district participate in the parking that's associated with SSA 1. And so for that tonight, we've presented a public notice, and we have notified the petitioner of the applicant of the information. And tonight we present this after the public hearing by the city committee of the whole. Then there's a 60-day waiting period before the council can take action, of which the property has rights during that period of time.
So tonight we need a motion just to approve the public hearing. Do I have such a motion, please?
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion by Alderman Marks and a second by Alderman Hill. I believe this can be a voice vote. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Okay. Thank you. Please proceed with the notification and the public hearing.
Okay.
In 60 days from now, we'll have this issue on our lap again.
Yeah, we've already notified for the public hearing.
Right. All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
All right. Now we're down to the regular items of business. Item number 3A is to consider approval of a request to use Oak Hill Cemetery for St. Peter Parish Mass on Sunday, September 25th this year from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. May I have such a motion, please?
So moved.
We have a motion from Alderman Vogelsberg and a second from Alderman Piper. Is there any discussion from the council, from the audience? Hearing no discussion, all in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Passed unanimously. Thank you. Item 3B, to consider approval of a request to use the West Side Cemetery for a Geneva History Center cemetery tour on September the 28th this year at 2 p.m.
Move approval.
Second.
We have a motion from Alderman Hill and a second from Alderman Marks. Is there any discussion of this issue from the council, from the chamber, public?
Well, just a little announcement. If you want a good laugh, come and see, because I'll be participating as one of the ghosts in the cemetery, or from the cemetery.
Much like he does here in the council.
Alderman Hill, are you going to wear a costume or just wash your face?
Where did that come from?
I may vote against this motion now after all these wonderful comments.
Are rumors of your passing premature?
Yes, yes. Holy moly.
We have a motion on the table, and the discussion seems to have ended.
Yes, there we go.
Well, do end it, Mr. Chairman.
It is actually being conducted for the visitors from our sister city, Croissy-sur-Seine in France. So it will be very interesting, being conducted by Margaret Selakovich of the History Center, and I presume it'll be very interesting. So all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you. You'll be unanimous. Item 3C, consider the draft ordinance exempting taxation from certain real properties within special service area number one. We'll start this by putting a motion on the table. Do I have a motion?
Second.
We have a motion by Alderman Piper and a second by Alderman Vogelsberg. And I believe the staff.
Mark Sorg Flanagan.
Oh, well, we'll call it Alderman Flanagan.
That is the jinxed side of the town.
I'll just have
I feel
to
your pain, Mayor.
That's terrible.
He did speak lower.
I suspect one of the staff would like to make a presentation on this for our benefit. Thank you again, Paul.
Thank you, Chairman Brown. Tonight we bring before us the 24 properties, which is in River North 100. In that condominium development, actually, the line for the SSA actually divides part of the building. So there are some parcels in that building that aren't even in the SSA, and their neighbor across the way. It's just unfortunately the way they divided the line way back when, and this was actually at the time of before it was developed, and they just left the line there, and later they taxed it. Well, in our review of the SSA parcel, SSA 1 parcels, we found that obviously this is a residential development, and they should be exempted from SSA 1 taxes. So that's what we're bringing forth tonight, is an exemption of those residential units.
So this is just the southernmost apartments in the southernmost of the three buildings.
Correct. We have talked to the county on the others, and the county will take care of that, which is outside of our SSA that was participated in that SSA.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the council? Alderman Flanagan.
Thank you, Chairman Brown. I need to just find out, there was a Zone B6 PUD. Was that zoning then changed? Did I make?
No, it's Zone B6.
So they can all run businesses in those?
Well, there's a special use in a PUD on that.
Okay, special.
But, and that's one of the things on the map, both this and as we know from last year, the single-family homes that we had at Dotson were SSA, were a B6 PUD. And so it shows a business zoning on it. Well, the county doesn't really understand that it could be a residential use. And so they painted it all the same. And so now we went around and identified which units are residential and which are business. And that, so it still has a business zoning, but the use is residential is what we look at.
Okay. So they'd have to go under a special use.
Yes, if they were to open a business, yeah, because the PUD says exactly what can go on in that property.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the council? Alderman Malandra?
Okay, so maybe I don't understand this. So the SSA exists in part to fund the parking lots, right?
Correct.
Fund the parking. These condos, unlike a single-family house, they don't have a driveway or something per se. So when visitors come, do you think visitors use the parking lots?
Yes. I mean, and on-street parking.
And on-street parking.
And right. And some of the residents use that, too.
So what I'm getting at is, does this condo building make as much use of the parking lot as would a business in the same area?
Well, we asked that question, and primarily for Community Development Director Dick Onchin asked him, as far as the parking, is it required for them to need the parking of this parking lot for their building? And his answer is no, that it qualified without that parking lot. And so that was our decision. I mean, after that was to say, if it's not required by ordinance, they may or may not take advantage of it. And there are some, but it's not a heavy use at this time.
Okay. I'll accept that, because to try and figure out, like, the prorated share of their use of the parking lot seems to be impossible. So that's right.
There is parking underneath the building, too. So, any other from the council? I believe we have someone in the audience who'd like to make a statement. If you would please come up to the microphone. We do want to record your words for the benefit of our worldwide audience on TV. Mrs. Pinsky? Ellen Pinsky?
Yes, Ellen Pinsky. I live at the 100 River North building.
Which apartment?
205.
Okay.
I'm one of the people that's involved in the...
For the record.
For
the
record, yes. As far as parking, we never park in that area. The only time we tried doing something was during Swedish days a couple years ago, when the crafters were all parking right next to our building, and the generators were going all night long, and it was difficult to sleep. So we came up with a thing just for Swedish days, just for the first 3 days of Swedish days, where we parked at intervals along the way just to keep the crafters from parking right next to us. Other than that, we never use the parking lot. We have our own parking area, and there's also parking along River Park, so there's no need for us to use that parking
lot. Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Very creative. Thank you.
Solve their own problem.
So I take it you're not objecting to this motion on the floor.
No.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other comments from the audience or the council? We have a motion on the floor. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Court is unanimous, please. Thank you. Item number 3D, consider draft resolution authorizing extension of easement agreement for electric distribution in Pepper Valley Units Number 1. May I have a motion, please?
So moved.
Second.
I have a motion from Alderman Flanagan and a second from, we'll give it to Mr. Alderman Dantino. Oh, it was Alderman Singer. Sorry. Got to get this ear working, too. I believe this is just a standard easement agreement. We've had a number of them now. Is that correct,
yep.
Ms. Dawkins?
That's correct.
Yes. Any questions from the council? All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Please record as unanimous. Thank you. Item 3E, consider a draft resolution authorizing execution of temporary easement agreement and permanent public utility easement for the McKinley Avenue Drainage Improvement District.
Move approval.
We have a motion.
Second.
Motion by Alderman Hill, second by Alderman Maladra. Is there any need for discussion on this issue? We have some maps in our packet that show exactly where this extension of the sewer line, I believe, will ease some flooding problems in that region, I believe is the yes. No discussion? The audience? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Against? Unanimous, please. Thank you. Item 3F. I got the right one. Yes. Consider renewal of group health, dental, vision, life insurance policies for the City of Geneva staff. Would we like to start with this with a presentation first, Ms. Dawkins?
You can. There's okay. Most of the information is in your packet. I did want to mention that Dan Walter from Lundstrom Insurance is also here to help answer any questions you might have. As I stated in the memo, it's been quite a difficult year for health insurance. I'm sure most of you watch the news, so there's been a lot of changes on the federal side, which are impacting our rates, along with some of our experience rating. And last year, we were really lucky. We had a whole 1.2% increase, so this year we expected a slight increase. It's a little more than slight. I think the biggest change to note, one of the things that we've done as a cost containment measure is to essentially split out the PPO from the HMO. Those used to be the same rates. But the PPO tends to be driving our costs, so we feel if you want the PPO, then you probably should have to pay a little bit more for that. So we're still providing options. There are three options, but it requires the employee to make a decision as to what they feel their needs are. So certainly if you have questions for myself or Dan, we're happy to entertain them.
Question? Alderman Piper?
With all the changes that are out there, what is it that they are
and that might be better answered by Dan. I can give you my opinion, but he's in the industry, so I'm going to.
Mr. Walder, welcome.
Dan Walder, good evening. Thank you.
Introduce yourself and your company.
Dan Walder, Lundstrom Insurance, Elgin, Illinois.
Thank you.
Would you restate the question?
Yeah, on the federal side, what's what they're really attributing to the cost increase to, Dan?
PPACA, as we, the acronym, which is being shortened for obvious reasons, implemented renewals beginning on or after September 23rd. So that's the first wave of changes that are affecting group health insurance plans. The City of Geneva's was virtually the first renewal that Blue Cross kicked out to our entire agency. In fact, initially it didn't comply with the terms of PPACA. Actuaries are trying to get their arms around it, and one of the biggest issues of it was there were 1,400 places in that legislation that were left blank. As the Secretary shall, meaning Secretary of Health and Human Services shall, or the IRS shall, complete something. And one of those provisions even had to do with grandfathering, which was this summer. It went into effect March 23rd. It was written this summer, and it's still in an interim stage, but it affected all plans last March. The first wave of benefits is unlimited lifetime maximum, a list of preventive services that have to be provided to your employees with, or your covered members, because you have retirees as well, that are provided with no cost sharing. There can't be a deductible, can't even be an office visit copayment. Some of the other things that aren't as impacting to businesses in the state of Illinois because it affected you last year was, for example, dependent age till age 26 can be on the plan. Under federal law, it will even allow your married children under age 26 to be on the plan. So there's a number of provisions that actuaries are attempting to get their arms around, but with the law being in its, in the course of being written stage, it's been particularly tough. So we have seen all renewals with all carriers escalate dramatically.
So this is the new legislation that was just passed?
Yes, the one that was announced in the spring.
Say it, Dan.
OPACA.
No, Dan.
Patient Protection.
Say what it's called, Dan.
Accountability Act.
Somebody say Obamacare. Do I have to say it?
You can. I can't.
Okay, I can. I just want somebody to say it. I knew what it was. I just asked because I want somebody to say it. This is what we're all paying for. It's just it's a big kick in the crotch is what it is. Okay, that's all I really want.
And it does really affect. I know that Secretary Sebelius just in the last few days has said publicly that she doesn't want insurance companies to say that that's causing an increase in health insurance costs. However,
exactly, she doesn't want to say it. And yet, I think what you hit on was really important. I hope everybody's paying attention. It's still being written as we're going through this.
That's correct.
And it's already been passed.
Correct.
That's fantastic. We can't do that in this room, can we?
No.
That's generally
riveting. Thank you, Dan. Fantastic. Glad to see these folks are at work for us, huh?
You can appreciate
every federal law that's passed. Oh, every single law that Congress passes is filled in by the agencies.
Unbelievable.
With this being such a substantial one, it makes budgeting very, very tough. In fact, the grandfathering provision that I referred to earlier really ties to the statement of if you want to keep what you have, you can keep what you have.
But it'll cost you.
And it will. That's effectively
yeah.
it. That was the key. So effectively, any group health insurance plan that was in effect on March 23rd when this law went into effect was considered grandfathered. Then they said, if you want to stay grandfathered, here's what you have to do. The city of Geneva would not have been able to increase any cost sharing, which was that was pretty much driven by your collective bargaining agreements. But you couldn't have changed your deductible, your co-insurance, a number of provisions. You couldn't have changed an office visit copay by $10 without losing your grandfathering provision. And grandfathering simply meant that you can avoid some of the provisions of the federal law, thus keep what you have the way that it is. And so we're seeing that while early estimates were 30 to 70% would probably lose it in the lose grandfathering provision in the first 2 years, what we're seeing pragmatically is a much, much higher percentage. It's probably going to be more in the 90% will lose it within the first 2 years. So it won't be, put it this way. If Blue Cross would have issued you with a rate increase of zero, you would have had complete flexibility to stay just exactly the way you were. But just even the preventive care and unlimited maximum alone adds about 1.5% to 2%. I'm sorry. You get to call on you.
So what you're saying is that your existing premium will increase if you change it in any way, shape, or form, or is it increasing? And then if you change it, explain it to me again, I guess.
That's not a problem. I'm glad you asked. Years past, the city of Geneva's increase was based upon its experience.
Okay.
As well as, you know, health conditions, claims paid. In fact, staff referred to some progressively worse experience. The last 6 months, your PPO claims experience was 89% worse than the first 6 months. Mm-hmm. And in fact, factually, when they projected the anticipated cost last year, they'd have been pretty much dead on if halfway through the year you would have annualized that. But this, you had a terrible 2010 on your PPO. So they would have created your renewal calculation with all of the formulas driving it as in every other year. Now what they had to add to that was the extra costs for the new coverage that legislation required that they put
on
the plan.
Okay, so they added it on.
Correct. Correct. And so that is a variable that, you know, it's been hard for businesses to
project. But if you change that, if you change your policy, then you end up paying even more?
No, it actually just would have.
Decreases.
If you didn't do anything to your policy, you would have retained a grandfathered status. And you wouldn't have had to comply with certain provisions like the preventive care that I mentioned earlier. But as soon as you decide that you're not going to be grandfathered, or as soon as the costs force that away from you.
That's what I was saying. That's what I was
trying
to.
Then you're going to get those extra costs. Yeah. No, I appreciate it. It's important that you understand.
Thank you.
Alderman Belladra?
Well, not necessarily to defend Obamacare, but certainly not to let the insurance companies off the hook completely. I'm looking at the table in our packet. Seems we've seen our share of double-digit rate increases, 13.92% in 2008, 10.6% in 2005, 14.9% in 2004. I think that insurance is, we're going to pay no matter where it comes from.
Any other questions? Alderman Marks.
Stephanie, probably a few. I just didn't understand your comment. Do we pay the same for every employee, whether they're in the HMO or PPO?
We pay a percentage, and in the past, the PPO plan and the HMOI plan were the same premium rate.
Okay.
And then you had the Blue Advantage HMO, which was about 10% less. What we've done now, and Dan can explain this, is we've split out the actual cost of those PPO versus the HMO, so there's a different rate structure now in place.
Okay.
But we still pay 90% for single and 80% for family or employee plus one.
So we don't, I guess my question is we don't say we pay 90% of single or of employee plus single plus one of the HMO rate. We pay 90%
of whatever the rate is.
Would it be advantageous for us to, for cost structure, to try to get more employees in the HMO or?
Yes. So that's our goal.
Should we look at that again?
We can't right now under our collective bargaining agreements.
I just was wondering if
that was actually something we were looking at, but under our current collective bargaining agreements, we spell out what those contribution rates are.
Okay.
So we had to look at other creative ways.
Understand.
But the goal would be by splitting out the costs and the PPO taking a greater hit because it's actually the one driving the cost. We would hope that there'd be a migration from the PPO to the HMO, which would ultimately save us all.
Well, the next question then that comes from this is, should we raise the deductible then more in the PPO to try to move people to the HMO?
Well, what we've done right now is we've raised it from 300 to 500. Technically, we could have gone up as high as 1,500, but my philosophy in kind of talking with Dan has been, take little steps so that in future years when you see double digits still, you still have room to move.
As I say,
if you do everything that first year, you kind of lost all your negotiating ability for future years.
I understand.
I think they're great questions.
Do it. Because how many employees percentage-wise do you think we have in the HMO based on the
50%.
So it's 50-50. Okay.
But remember, we have two different HMO plans. So
that's
it's
right.
50% in the PPO, and then the other 50% are split between two plans. I will point out, and I think I might have mentioned it, one of the things when they marketed us, they look at national trends, and you'll notice that we have a lot more dependents on our plans than the national trends. We have, on a family plan, we have 51.9% who have family plan, where the national trend is 30%. So another goal would be we've made some changes, and if you have a spouse or somebody who also has insurance, you might want to be looking at your spouse's plan. So rather than everybody always jumping on the city's plan because it's the Cadillac, maybe we need to look at what we're offering and compared to what others are offering. So it's a touchy.
No, I understand. I just was trying to understand, you know, I think, it's offline discussion. That's fine.
I point out that we offer health insurance. It's not mandatory that employees take it. However,
they all do.
In the future, there may be the requirement that we are required to offer it.
Right.
So just something to keep in mind. The PPACA, I think all the provisions don't go into effect until 2014.
The biggest wave of provisions goes in 2014.
So we're still going to see this continuing to work itself
which
out.
Which may or may not be affected by the fall elections. But we actually have to, you know, work with staff as if nothing changes the way it is exactly right now. But what she did refer to was it was more of a strategic decision to say, to evaluate all the options and say, can we implement this over a period of time as opposed to doing it all at one time?
Well, I don't want to force everybody in the HMO either. You have to have kind of buy into that idea. I just wondered what the breakdown was because I thought, based upon your comment there, that we had such a large increase in the PPO at the end of the year. My assumption was to try to get all the employees into the HMO.
It'll actually allow me to make a comment on the unified. The City of Geneva's renewal has always been prepared on what's called a unified basis. So they don't target whatever plan had the good or bad experience.
Okay.
Blue Cross calculates each one individually, each plan, then aggregates them, and then creates a total rate increase. And so that has been the case here. So it didn't whack the PPO. But what was done was in an effort to differentiate that pricing, as she referred to, from the PPO and the HMOI, was to try and get an underwriter to price it a little bit more the way it should have been in the first place. And frankly, she did it relatively conservatively. We anticipated a much wider spread. But at least it's moving in the right direction, and the renewals will still be unified. So whereas this year the PPO had atrocious experience in general, comparatively, and you still have some large ongoing claims, they would have anticipated one, you know, for a group this size, and you still have three. So it's those things that we anticipate will still be a factor going forward. But in general, this is a strategic step in the right direction, and hopefully you'll return to, you know, you've had two out of the last three prior renewals were really, really good. And so generally speaking, you're still well under trend, despite the fact that it's a fairly rich plan.
Yeah,
and that you have the limitations of your bargaining agreements that you may want to revisit in the future.
And I would just add to that, we did look at totally splitting out PPO from HMO, and it would have been almost a 35% increase for the PPO, which that's just ridiculous. So that's why they were able to work with Blue Cross Blue Shield and kind of still keep the blended rate but reapportion it.
So realistically, we're getting a 16.5% increase, so that's really what the employees are probably going to be seeing also.
The employees will see the same percentage, so if they select the PPO, it's a 16.15. In one place I had 16.5, but it's actually 16.15 in the recommendation. I apologize. And then if they take the HMOI or the Blue Advantage, then it's a 10.62%. So
if I can add one clarity to that, Ms. Marks.
Yes.
If you look at the bottom right corner,
I don't have that.
Oh, I'm sorry. So by the time you look at the 16.15 was for the PPO, it's lower in the HMO. So your blend is about 13.5.
Okay, fine.
And as I mentioned, we budgeted 10%. So, you know, it's going to play out. But also, we also budgeted a 3% increase for dental, and dental is flat. There is no increase there. So there is some cost shifting.
Thank you.
Alderman Dentino?
I think I might have just answered this question. You said we pay 90% for a single person and 80% for a family and a husband.
We have a three-tier plan. So we have single, which is 90, employee plus one is 80, and family is 80.
Family is 80. Okay. So then I think the question was answered that Rich asked was the employees are going to see that whatever plan they're in percentage. All right, the other question I had was you said something that I just didn't understand. You just said that we do offer health insurance, but if we were required to offer it later on?
Later on, if we have so many employees, we're required to, I think.
If you're referring to the 200.
200, right.
That's an auto-enrollment.
Auto-enrollment. We would be required to automatically enroll our employees.
If you're under 200.
If you hit that 200 mark.
Okay.
The employee will be able to opt out. It's going to be basically the legislation was intended to make sure that the person doesn't waive it just so they don't have deductions and take the easy route out. Mm-hmm. But I thought what she was actually speaking to, which is part of that, is it's going to be at a point when an employer has to offer the insurance, but some large industries, frankly, are taking a look at their budget and saying, we'll pay the fine. We just won't offer insurance, and we'll let them go get it out of the purchasing exchange. It's some of the issues that have to be addressed because the concept of PPACA was intended to get everybody insured, healthy and unhealthy, but the provisions as they apply are really just starting with a lack of revenue and getting the unhealthy in. or getting at least expenses on the front end and not necessarily cost recovery. So there, in our opinion, we don't think that there's much in there to address the underlying causes of the cost. And so until that gets modified, even Massachusetts, one of the states that this was somewhat patterned after, is having dire financial troubles for their health insurance plan for the state employees, and they're over national trend. And so there are some underlying things that may well get fixed as this legislation moves forward or may change dramatically.
Let's hope so. Thank you.
Thank you.
If there are no other questions, I'd like to ask a question. I understand from what you're saying that it sounds like there's a little bit of conservativeness on the underwriters here. They're being a little careful to estimate how much. But these are experience-based plans. So right. If indeed they overestimated, our rate would presumably go down next year. Is that correct?
When I say conservative, it's trying to appraise the impact of PPACA. If indeed these trends were better, the real costs were better than anticipated, we argue that all the time. The difficulty we see is as we compare markets, the others are going up higher. In fact, all the other three major carriers that we went to all declined your business, said we can't even compete with your current pricing, much less what we anticipate the pricing to be.
Our rate seems to bounce around quite a bit, as has already been noticed.
Right.
Is that based on our individual experience only?
No. Your group is not of such a size that it's 100% credible to stand on its own merits. So it is blended with a manual rate, a manual experience. But yours is tended not to be better than manual, so it doesn't always help you. But it does carry the weight of your own particular experience.
It must. I mean, the only way you can go from 2% 1 year to 16% the next year must be highly weighted by our own experience, because certainly health costs nationwide go up much more smoothly than that.
They do. If everything was ideal, you could actually have a group. If you had zero turnover, everybody got a year older. But even if you could offset that down to those things being exactly the same, the trend historically with Blue Cross cases has been in the 10 to 12% range. Just the trend factor, which is consisting of all those factors that go into it, whether it's medical inflation, cost shifting. When the government takes a further cut on Medicare and Medicaid, for example, then it's going to come out of somebody's pocket. Which is one of the concerns for PPACA, too, that if a doctor is forced to take less for Medicare and Medicaid patients and there's going to be an increase in the number of people covered under Medicare and Medicaid, they're trying to appraise how much is that really going to wind up costing us. And those are tough figures because the Congressional Budget Office and the Government Accounting Office, former officials have given different answers than the current officials because unfortunately, the CBO is asked a question that's a formula. It's if this happens and this happens and this happens, how much is it going to cost? And what I would equate it to is if I went and got pre-approved for a mortgage, and so that I get a sense of security as to what kind of a house price range I can shop for, and then I go to actually apply for the mortgage, then they find out about all of the bills I have or that I co-signed for my brother, auto loan or something. Then I get the real answer. And right now, what was touted to be $850 million is well over a trillion. And the concern is really going to be those subjective costs that they can't quantify. And if providers say, I can't live on increased Medicare and Medicaid patient loads and decreased payments, and I close up my shop and I'll go merge with another practice or in a larger community, there's going to be unserved areas. So there's things that underwriters have a real difficulty getting their arms around.
Please don't use the word appraise. Appraise is based on data that exists. These are guesses.
Okay. Well, there you go.
They're trying to guess.
And I'm thinking of actuary, and I'm going, they don't ever want me to use the word
guess. That's why I made the point. These are in the end, experience based. So if they guess wrong, the rate will reflect it next year.
Yeah. And frankly, your very favorable increase last year, it was anticipated that it was going to be substantially worse. So the pendulum probably swung back a little bit last year already, and we gained some advantage, which will cause for a higher percentage increase.
At some point, it would seem to me, if this continuing disparity between PPO and HMO exists, that it would make sense for the city considering only offering one program. Do many groups our size do that?
Typically not. Typically they will offer dual choices, and that provides, especially in a bargaining environment, the opportunity for an employee to choose what both financially mm-hmm. will and personally will suit them better. The
PPO does offer more than the HMO. I mean, I've compared them myself in the past.
Yeah. The thing is, Chairman, that you've had such a relatively rich plan by having such a low deductible that what's a typical disparity between an HMO and a PPO is very narrowed. And so the attraction is, well, shouldn't I, if I don't have to pay any more, I'll go someplace where I can have all of the choice I want. I can go to pretty much any provider, one in the morning, one in the afternoon. With the HMO, your costs are managed and your care is managed, and but there's not really a financial incentive the way that you normally would have it. Typically, it's going to be about a 25 to 30% spread between a comparable PPO and an HMO. Then if an employee is paying, whether it's 10 or 20%, they've got a little financial skin in the game, plus then deductible and coinsurance. And that's just kind of softened here. So there's not a compulsion, which is why it's 50-50. I might have, you know, with HMOI and the Blue Advantage HMO, it's great choices to have. But the other thing would be is you have, for example, retirees. So if you're, and they're not necessarily living around here. So if you continue to cover retirees as IMRF and the State Department of Insurance says you should, then if you only offered an HMO, for example, you've got a retiree in Arkansas, they're out of luck. And we monitor the IMRF and the Department of Insurance interpretation on this every year, and IMRF just kind of said, whatever you say, Department of Insurance.
I understand your argument, then, that why it makes sense to offer both. But it sounds, when you talk about blending, and Ms. Dawkins talks about blending, that we're asking the people who take the HMO to actually carry some of the load that should be carried by the PBO people. Is that fair?
Well, on any given year, the story could be just the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
You could have an HMO be the atrocious experience in a given year, and then the PPO.
But there really is a difference in the program. So how much of that experience and how much of that is the fact that PPOs actually offer more? They offer transferability to other states than HMOs don't, et cetera. So there is really, you know, we're not comparing apples and apples here. It's apples and oranges.
No, it's just.
To what extent are we blending apples and oranges here with these rates? I must admit I still haven't figured that out okay. From this discussion.
Stephanie mentioned earlier that if we let each plan stand on its own merits this year, the PPO increase would have been in the 33 to 35% range, and your two HMOs would have basically been flat or held the same, because one was up a couple percent, one was down a couple percent. So effectively, they would have been still blended no matter what, because you want the 10% differential to be there for the people that take the smaller network.
How would we have blamed Obamacare if they'd stayed flat?
How would we have? Well, you had 50% of your people in the plan that would have gone up 30-some-odd percent.
Because of experience.
Yeah, and I won't blame PPACA legislation for your total increase. It is a factor in your increase, by all means.
I would just make a point that if we totally separated them out, the city still contributes 90% for a single and 80% for a family, so the city would still be contributing that 30% more also.
Right.
Where this way it reduces the impact to the city's budget.
And ours is the biggest section of the pie, right. Alderman Dantino?
So I think I understand your argument, but it's based on what side of the fence the claim comes in then, if it's on the HMO side or the PPO.
If you were to separate them, yes.
Yes, okay. Because you're saying that this year we would have been impacted because obviously then most of the claims came in the PPO side of the mm-hmm. of the thing, and next year it could be reversed. We don't know which person, unfortunately, is going to have that claim.
And once we completely unblend or completely separate, we can never go back.
Right.
Mm. So that's been also part of the philosophy is, let's see, can we keep them blended but start?
Why is that?
That's Blue Cross
that's
Blue Shield.
That's a carrier rule. Otherwise, they know that.
You'll play the game.
So Blue Cross doesn't want to allow you to play the game both ways.
Mm-hmm.
They like to, but not us.
They're trying to project your costs as accurately as possible. That's our role, though, is to hold them accountable, which is why, you know, we will get everything we can get out of them, and one of the first things we're going to do is go to other carriers so we have leverage or choices. But when all the other carriers say we can't compete with current rates, much less those projected rates, that somewhat validates a renewal underwriting.
So my next question is, and you might answer this, are we charging different amounts for the PPO to our employees versus the HMO?
Yes.
Okay. And that would be our only incentive to get people to move from the...
Correct.
Right.
And so, then also, you know, we're doing an education campaign. About 95% of the people who are currently on the regular HMO plan could possibly move to the Blue Advantage HMO plan. It's the same plan. The only difference is the network of doctors. And if your doctor's on the other plan, you could actually save money by taking the smaller network. So we're looking at that and educating employees to let them know, hey, your doctor is in both plans. You might want to look at this because it's the exact same plan.
Mm-hmm. Alderman Piper?
Thanks, Chuck. Dan, I'm not giving you a hard time. You guys did a great job with what you're doing, absolutely. My biggest fear really long term is, in the last 5 years, this is one of the bigger hits we've taken. My biggest fear is moving forward as I look back and I see, you know, 2002 to 2005, we had double-digit hits for four years in a row. And as this legislation, as your people start to get their heads around this and things keep getting dropped in, and we've had this discussion in this room, we play a zero-sum game. And as they continue to add and continue to add and continue to add, you can't give to one without taking from the other. Somebody's got to pay for it. And I have this gut feeling we're going to be seeing these double-digit gains on an annual basis. We're going to be back here doing the same thing, and hopefully you guys can continue to do the job that you're doing. You guys did a nice job. I
appreciate it. Thanks. You know. Our concern would certainly be the same. And the variable, I think, for us out of this legislation is what's the ultimate goal. And I think there's there are differing opinions as to what the ultimate goal of this administration is.
Well, I think if somebody had read it, they could tell you. But
yeah. We're hoping that it's just genuinely good, improved health care, but we would encourage and hope that this administration will attack underlying causes, which certainly is malpractice and fraud.
It would be nice. Yeah.
That has to be done no matter who's in the office and no matter which party is got the majority.
Absolutely. I agree with you. Absolutely.
Thanks.
Thank you.
I believe we started the discussion without a motion on the floor. Is there any discussion from the audience before we go to a formal motion? May I have a formal motion to accept the recommendation that the city renew its policy with Blue Cross Blue Shield as outlined tonight by Ms. Dawkins?
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion by Alderman Marks, a second by Alderman Volsberg. Are there any more discussion points needed?
And may I just make that?
Certainly.
The motion would include the dental plans, mm-hmm. as well as the life insurance and the vision, just so.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure that.
It wasn't fly. I thought that was.
Both the motioner and the seconder are not agreeing.
Yes.
So that's perfect, Ms. Dawkins.
Dental, vision, life.
Any other discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? It carries unanimously.
Thank you kindly.
Thank you,
Mr.
Walder. We appreciate that, and we appreciate your work.
Yes, thank you.
I think we've come up down to the point of new business. Is there any new business to be raised by a council member? Anyone in the audience like to bring up some new business that the council should be aware of? You're sitting so quietly in the corner back there.
Good place to be.
There's no new business. I'll ask for a motion for adjournment.
So moved.
We have a motion by Alderman Hill, a second by Alderman Marks. All in favor, please stand and say aye.
Aye.
Say goodbye.
Not necessarily in that order.
And say goodbye.